Lindbergh on the Roswell incident, side A of tape two. So following that accident, do you remember any, was there a big deal made of it, or is just...
No, there really wasn't. One thing, the injury I had in the crash I was in was a lot more severe. So, you know, I'm not sure we had any other crash injuries. Nothing. Mine was really the worst in the whole shebang. And even that, I was back in work. It was on a Friday. I was back in work on Monday anyway. Mm-hmm. So the only serious one we had was not at Holloman. It was the one with Captain Shock up in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Anyway, compared to the others, mine and Captain Shock's, this wasn't considered. It was just kind of a temporary.
All right. Yeah. So then after that, Kittinger went on to make these three jumps and did set the record for the high altitude bailout. Okay. And then that was the end of the. There were no more dummies. We won't show any records.
No.
Later than February 59.
No, definitely not. No. I guess his next endeavor was sort of Stargazer, yeah.
Well, that brings me to the next question.
Yeah.
The next project Kittinger was on was another high-altitude balloon project, Project Stargazer with the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, and Kittinger ran a Navy scientist from China Lake went up to.
Right.
What altitude did they go up to? Do you remember?
Oh, it was about 90,000.
About 90.
Yeah.
And just a quick one, do you remember who the scientific advisor was for that project?
Yeah, that was the author of Close Encounters.
Really, what was his name?
I keep on think on a mental block of his name, but...
The Blue Book guy, then?
Yeah, the author of Close Encounters.
J. Allen Hynek?
Hynek, yeah, Dr. Hynek, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you ever have any interaction with him?
Only, not on Blue Book, because he got involved with Blue Book after it was closed locally, you know, and got transferred to Colorado and so on.
Okay.
All my interaction with him was strictly on Stargazer.
So did he come to the balloon branch? Or?
Oh, yes, yeah. Not regularly, but a few times.
Do you remember briefing him on Stargazer, or? Because we found...
Yeah. Well, I probably briefed him, but, you know, no different than I brief any other contractor.
So he would have been knowledgeable as to your capabilities, obviously.
Oh, yeah, sure.
As you would brief all contractors of what you can do for them and things like that.
Plus, we had a lot of problems with that balloon before the hot flight. So we had a lot of flights, test flights prior to maybe like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, maybe half a dozen. It was a heavy load. It was one of the heaviest loads we'd flown up to then. And we were experimenting with a new balloon that didn't work out initially. So we had a whole bunch of test flights before the hot flights.
With various, the pictures I've seen is there was mock-up gondolas.
That's right.
And
that's
then there was big, full-scale, very big gondola.
Yeah, right.
The one gondola has a dome around the top of it, the one that they ended up using.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they only made what, one man flight with that?
Yeah, I think they intended more than one, but they spent so much on the developing of a new balloon for the system. Plus, they found out there were problems on board with stability and so on, which would have taken a long time to work out. And even though they wanted follow-up flights, it just didn't work out.
Okay. Did Dr. Hynek ever ask you about...
Blue Book?
Blue Book.
Never. Never.
Did he ask you about balloons possibly causing UFOs or anything along those lines?
No. Okay.
I'd like to ask you about another project that you had told me about previously. You said there was another incident where you kind of got a little comical where you guys were chasing a balloon and it came down near Dallas.
Oh, yeah. That was another top secret program. We flew a number of reconnaissance programs, calibrating reconnaissance cameras, and they were all classified. And even after 119L, they were reconnaissance cameras for satellites, reconnaissance satellites, and for aircraft too, come to think of it. And the last one we flew, and I forget the name and number of the program, but it was with a 10,000 pound payload, and it was classified as usual, but to the extent where they flew, in addition to our tracking crew, they had a crew specialist in helicopters, as I remember, that went along, so they would get to the idea was to get to the gear as fast as possible to cover it up and so on. And the helicopter would get into the site faster than the ground vehicle, so they accompanied the whole fleet. Yeah.
Security personnel?
Yeah, security personnel.
Armed security personnel?
Yeah. Yeah, they were armed.
Okay.
So on the last flight, our requirement was to get as close to Dallas, that whole metropolitan area, as possible in order to, because there was a maximum amount of optical targets down there, you know, a million houses and so on. And I had good luck in hitting the target pretty much square. So we spent quite a bit of time on the outskirts of Dallas at 100,000 feet getting data. And then we had intended to bring the thing down east of Dallas, where that's where the jet crew would carry us, away from the city. We didn't want to be near any habitation. But I got the second hand, because I finally got to bed after 38 hours, and the rest of the meteorologists in my organization carried on. But there was some problem with the ballast. We'd used up so much ballast, there wasn't much left. And one way or the other, we had lost a lot of control, so we had to terminate early. And the thing wound up, not in Dallas proper, but the outskirts of Dallas. And on a Sunday, as I remember. And the story, as I remember it, there was it was on a Sunday, and Dallas was playing at home, so everybody was tuned to it. No, it couldn't have been home, because that'd be a blackout. Anyway, Dallas was playing on a Sunday, so everybody in Dallas was tuned to the TV set. When the thing came down, the streets were pretty empty, and so the guys were able to kind of wrap things up with not too many people around. And then as they were finishing wrapping it up, the game ended, and everybody came pouring into the streets. Mm-hmm. And by this time, they had the thing covered up, so, you know, it wasn't any problem, and they just told them it was an Air Force experiment, and they were working to get the thing secured and so on. So they had a black block party and treated the troops to some refreshments and some drinks and had a big celebration. Everybody was in good spirits because Dallas had won.
I see.
But in the meantime, our the civilian heads, the two civilian heads of our organization, were flying in from Bedford. And they happened to, and they were changing planes to Dallas, and they expected this, you know, if there was a recovery, it'd be out in the Bondoc someplace. And instead, they saw this, it was a triple chute system with 10,000 pounds come floating down right within sight of the airport. Boy, were they shook up.
Mm-hmm. I ask you about that incident because
balloons
are somewhat unpredictable.
Yeah.
I mean, you
what
if you consider a bullseye, what would the, if you were able to, if you say I hit the bullseye from 100,000 feet, what type of
well, depends upon the target.
CEP are we talking about?
No, it depends on the target. In this area, it was any place within the Dallas metropolitan area is a pretty good sized area with all those suburbs and so on anyway. So in that case, since it was a long trajectory, they didn't expect you to hit within a few miles. I mean, this was 400 miles. So
how about even on the range?
Oh, on the range.
On the range or in the New Mexico area?
Well, your most precision trajectories were for hitting the target areas on the range. And those, once again, the prime target area was 10 miles square.
So a bullseye from 100,000 feet?
Would be in the middle of the target area.
10 miles?
A little bit less than 10 miles, yeah. So on Joe's bailout, last bailout, I hit within 2 miles of the target center, yeah, from 103,000. But it was a short trajectory, so, you know, you can go for precision on a short trajectory. 400 miles is something else again.
How about with these dummies, if you were trying to get them near this?
Well, they were the same thing. You were shooting for, you didn't have to hit the damn center of the top, the bullseye, the exact center of the 10-mile square, but you wanted to be pretty close to it because they had to triangulate on their optical. Their optical trackers depend upon a computer triangulation of maybe a half a dozen sites, so you wanted to be real close, so the closer you were, the better their accuracy was for the final reports.
So a bullseye could be within 5 miles, would be a bullseye?
Yeah. On the range, it'd be 5 miles, right?
Elsewhere, it could be a lot more.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, the last thing I'd like to ask you about is the Project Viking, actually Project Voyager and Viking. Voyager.
Yeah.
Voyager was in the late 60s, Viking was in 1972.
Yeah.
And
right.
the photographs I've gotten from NASA and from Air Force files, this vehicle that they were shooting, the aeroshell, looked just like a flying saucer.
Sure. Plus in the case of Viking, it was huge.
And did you work on those trajectories?
Certainly, sure.
Do you remember where they were launched from?
Yeah, they were all launched from Roswell.
This time now, Roswell, Roswell Army Airfield became Walker Air Force Base.
That's right.
Walker Air Force Base closed in about 1967. So
yeah.
The records indicate it was launched from the former Roswell Army Airfield, which is Roswell Industrial Air Center.
Yeah.
At Roswell, New Mexico.
Right. Yeah. Actually, there was also a civilian airport, a small one.
Right.
Roswell. And we launched some things, not necessarily Viking, from there also.
So you...
Yeah. So we launched from two locations in Roswell at one time or another.
But these flying saucer type looking NASA vehicles, they're all, I believe there were 8 of them, they were all launched from Roswell.
Yeah.
That's what the records indicate. Did you ever have anyone say to you, or did you get any reports like you did previously that anyone said what is this? Or it was on the TV, I can remember it was on the TV, it wasn't a classified project.
No.
Did you have any inquiries or any?
Well, the reason for that was that one of those finally wound up in the missile park at White Sands Proving Grounds base, in White Sands base. Mm-hmm. And
Is it still there now?
It may still be there.
Okay.
I haven't checked in a long time. But anyway, some reporter saw it, took some pictures of it, and wrote a story about, does White Sands have something to do with flying saucers? You know, this is a captured flying saucer. It was half facetious, but nevertheless, I guess it made some press releases all over the country at the time. But it was one of those, either Viking or Voyager, I forget which. I think it was more inclined to be Voyager.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, both of them looked very
nice. They looked similar.
We got
complete
photographs of those. Well, that's probably close to, I think that's all the questions I have, unless you'd like to add something.
Yeah. No, I can't.
But is there any...
They may be covered.
Is there any doubt that these things are not in any way extraterrestrial, but they're indeed Air Force projects being launched?
Sure, there's no doubt, because even the UFO books, well, it's surprising to think about them, they gave such a good description of what they really were. I mean, of our equipment. They gave great descriptions of our equipment. which in one sense is surprising, you know, the fact that they were, I mean, they didn't know what it was, they described it as something different, but the descriptions were almost perfect. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I don't have any more questions, so
no.
That's it, and I'd like to thank you very much.
Okay, and enjoyed working with the program.